equations. So this is under the setting of the method of stationary phase. Which is this bit right here. Now is this on? Yes. Okay, I'm talking about the method of stationary phase. I'm dripping on the method of stationary phase. So just a brief reminder is that we we decided to take up, so I guess we are on section 2.7. Method of stationary phase. So we decided to take up a, well, it's the same problem as before, but I want to view it slightly more global, slightly more uniformly. So I want to look at problem, the differential equations of the following form. D by dt u is equal to p of d u, where, to start with, p of d is a polynomial. Well, let me say it this way. P of c is a polynomial in c in Rn. So, in particular, of degree m. So let's say that's going to be of the following form. Coefficient c alpha, take multi-indices up to and equal to m, c, to the alpha. And then, and we're using the usual notation that d is equal to 1 upon I d by dx, so that is dj is 1 upon I d by dxj, and that suits the Fourier transform, of course. Then we went through a litany of examples. I'm reminding you what happened a week ago. Since there was a meeting in Patterns in Physics, a week ago is almost infinity, so it's reasonable to have a short reminder, at least for me. I don't know about you. That was a lot of talks. So the reminder is the reminder is a set of examples. It's the Schrodinger equation. Where I'm looking at I d by dt of u, so I'm going to divide by I, so is minus I, Laplacian u, oh, 1/2 Laplacian u, so it's minus I upon 2 Laplacian u, which I can write as I upon 2 length of d squared u, using this notation. So it's the sum of the squares of the components of c. And then 2 is the heat equation, which is going to be d by dt of u is equal to 1/2 Laplacian u, which is equal to minus 1/2 mod d squared u. And of course, this is a polynomial because length of d squared, d is a vector, so it's going to be d1 squared plus dn squared. Simple polynomial. And the wave equation, I'm not going to write it down because I did it last time, but the reminder is, oh, it's a system. A system of equations. A 2x2 system. It's probably the third time I wrote the wave equation down as a system, all in slightly different ways. So the first impulse is to say that the method, of course, is to take the Fourier transform. And what I want to do is study the results of this method. So I'm just trying to get to that point. So take the Fourier transform. So if I take the Fourier transform of equation 1, I'm going to get equation 2, which is partial by partial t of u hat of xi. That's going to be a function of xi and t. It's going to be equal to d turns into xi, right? P of xi, u hat of xi and t. And now this is an ODE. So an ODE or system of ODE with parameter in Rn. And we did it each time as we found whose solution is u hat of c and t is equal to e to the t p c u hat 0 of c. And so the method is, of course, to write, was simply to write down this thing and then evaluate it. And there's a bigger general theory which I'm going to give later. I just want to talk about the theory. I just want to talk about a few of these problems when there's particular, the ones that are particularly neat and also particularly physical to study. So 3 is then, I have to know what u is. So I say u of xt is equal to the inverse Fourier transform, 1 upon root 2 pi to the n e to the I x c, e to the I c x are usually right, e to the t p c u hat 0 c d c. And I want to analyze. And this could be a well-defined expression, and it could be a terrible expression. In fact, that I've just written down an oscillatory kernel that may not even be a tempered distribution. But at least it formally works out. What I want to do is specify a case where it's good. So we want to specify a case where this, where a couple things happen. One, this gives a good solution. And two, I want to analyze that solution. And I think that analysis will have physical interest. So this gives a good solution. So let me think what I want to do. So definition 1. So here's my situation. And let's see, already one of our principal examples of the wave equation is a system. So I want to include that, but if I do, I also include a couple of nightmares, so I'm not going to include it. We could do it, but it will distract to get rid of the nightmares. So let's not include it. Let's just simply look for scalar equations. Okay? So I'm going to restrict ourselves now for scalar equations. So restriction for simplicity and for pedagogy to scalar cases. So let's restrict, let's agree to restrict to scalar equations. And definition 1, which is when the polynomial P of C, not P of C. Let's see, this is any old polynomial C alpha, or any old coefficients, in particular they are complex valued, possibly. As in the example, they're I's and non-I's, so could be real, could be complex valued. So when the polynomial I P of C is real for C real, remember, we had this Paley-Wiener theory where C suddenly turned into zeta. It's non-real. Let's keep it real, because that gives us a real wave number or a real momentum. And then I want I P of C to be real for C real. Then we say that P of C is of real type. Okay, and then the footnote here is that really in bigger mathematical circles, what we're concerned with is the principal part of P, and so the concern is of real principal type. But we're eliminating all that. We don't want to deal with sub-principal things which annoy the principal thing. So let's just make it real, and then we avoid such a discussion. Let's make the whole thing real. Okay? And let's see our examples. The Schrodinger equation, is that of real type? You look at the right-hand side, it's I times the mod d squared. So that's I times P is real. Now I have to figure out, what have I done wrong? I have to catch up with you. Sorry, P is I d squared, so I P is minus d squared. That's what it is. So that's P on the right-hand side, and I P is a minus 1/2 d squared, which is real. You were thinking that all along, but I had a sudden stutter. Okay? Is it of real type? Yeah. Good. So we're thinking about equations. Equations with the right-hand side of real type are like the Schrodinger equation. The heat equation. P is 1/2 mod d squared. So IP is I times something real, which happens to be pure imaginary, as C is pure imaginary. So it's not. Okay? And it stands to reason that this expression makes sense for one direction of T but not the other, so there's more complexity in analyzing that. Well, not really for the heat equation, but it doesn't fit into the rubric. Wave equation. I'm not even on the board, but maybe I should have put the right-hand side is 0, 1, Laplacian, so minus d squared, 0. And suppose we were to not restrict to scalars, then we would look at the eigenvalues of that matrix. And I times the eigenvalues of that matrix, are those real? Yep. So we're thinking of things like the wave equation, things like the Schrodinger equation, not things like the heat equation. Good. Let me extend this immediately. Oh, and then part of the definition is I times P of Xi defines omega of Xi. Let me see. I think I have the sign right. The dispersion relation. And I want to extend this immediately, but I just had the thought, maybe I should just write down the dispersion relation. Maybe I should just write down the dispersion relation here. For the Schrodinger equation, it's so the dispersion relation here is I times P is minus, so it's minus 1/2 Xi squared. That's omega of Xi. I don't like the minus, but I guess I'm stuck with it. Seem to have reversed time in this process, but I'm stuck with it. The heat equation doesn't fit the rubric. Let's not write down the dispersion relation. We'll get something which is complex. The wave equation, surely you have the eigenvalues of this from sitting there for 2 seconds and looking at it. They are plus or minus C. So these are two dispersion relations, omega plus or minus of C. Okay? Those are the eigenvalues. Oh, the eigenvalues of this are plus or minus I C. And so omega, you take away that I and make it minus or plus C. That's what I want. Okay. Let's move along. I want to extend that immediately and have a definition two. So definition two, which is going to be useful in a second, because what I'm going to find is polynomial is restrictive. And I want actually to do other things more than just polynomial. So definition two take this with me, is that we know what a Fourier multiplier is. It's a function of D, meaning that's an operator which you take the Fourier transform and multiply by a function of C to implement. So a Fourier multiplier. So the definition too is a Fourier multiplier omega of D. So I'm thinking that I want to implement this equation for d by dt u equals minus omega of d u. P of d is minus omega of d u. I want to implement this equation with a more general Fourier multiplier on the right-hand side. And I'm going to want it to be real, and I also want it to be a symbol. So this is the definition of a symbol. So this is called a symbol, and I'm defining symbol. Here I was defining real type. Here I'm defining a symbol. When I need two things. I want omega of C to be smooth. It needn't be, but I'd rather not have to count derivatives. So let's just make it smooth. But it could fail at zero. So on R, and I don't really care at zero. And I need something else. And I need one more thing, which is actually the crux. So and for all multi-indices, beta, I want to do the following thing. I want to take omega of C. I want to take many derivatives. I want to test its size. And, whoops, I'm going to screw your notes up by changing my notation a little bit. A symbol of order M when it's smooth, and this is bounded above by a constant that could depend on beta, 1 plus C squared to the M, but it gets better. It gets less. It grows like M. But if you take derivatives, it grows less fast. Not every smooth function does that. So I'm going to insist that these smooth functions do. I just want that. It will be a symbol of real type. I can say the two words together, and then I'm going to talk about the result. Okay? Oh, and in fact, you speak before me because I was just going to write that down just to tie with this definition. So a symbol is of real type when omega of C is always real for C in varying over the reals. And then, of course, we're going to study an initial value problem. And I'm going to embed that in a proposition. So proposition 3, because we already had two definitions, which is in case that omega of C is a symbol of real type, then the initial value of problem which is I have equation 1, equation 2, so I guess this is I have equation 3, so I guess this is equation 4, which is d by dt of u is equal to, now I have to put the I in, so minus I omega of d u, and I want to start out u at x 0 is equal to something given, and I'm going to give that in L2. And the statement of the proposition is this is well posed. meaning this is well posed in L2. Yep. Omega Xi is a symbol. Because omega Xi is a symbol, absolutely. A Fourier multiplier omega D is called, now I'm in trouble, is given by a symbol omega Xi of its semantics. The Fourier multiplier is an operator, but it's multiplying by a function. So depends on whether you, on which side of the bed did you get out of this morning, the Fourier transform side or the real side, or the spatial side. Yeah. Okay, well, in L2, there aren't even any derivatives. So what I have to do is convince you there is a well-defined flow in L2, which on smooth solutions satisfies classically that equation. And on non-smooth solutions, satisfies, well, something, meaning it will satisfy the equation weakly. So the proof is write down this solution and just verify that it's an L2. So here's the proof. It's actually warm, a little overheated in here. What do we want to do? So this is going to mean. So I want this to be means that if you start U naught in L2, then there's a well-defined solution. Then U of XT. In fact, U of XT defined by 3 remains in L2. And then, of course, one has to show as well that that has some meaning vis-a-vis the equation. And my biggest goal today is actually analyze that expression. So I guess 3 steps. I'm probably going to skimp on several.
Yeah.
For all real t. It's a linear equation. It'll be true for all real t. Okay? Of course, there's also a question of continuity. So I guess I should have put a comma and you do the following thing. The limit as t goes to 0 of u of x of t minus the initial data equals 0, and the limit's going to be in the L2 norm. So it's continuous. Well, it's continuous at 0, but it's a group, so it's going to be continuous everywhere if it's continuous at 0. And that's why it's first off show that it's well defined, right? So our expression. For u is 3. So in particular, I'm supposed to test the take some time t and look at how big the spatial L2 norm of u is. So u of x t, this is L2. I'm taking the space L2 norm, right? I'll square it. Well, it's by Poincaré, it's u hat c. T, the C L2 norm squared. And now we go to this expression and we'll say, well, we can automatically do U hat knowing the Fourier inversion theorem just by saying this is the inverse Fourier transform of this. So that's equal to the absolute value of E to the I, hang on a minute, e to the tp, but tp is equal to What's my sign again? P is equal to minus I omega. So e to the I, hang on a minute. E to the TP is e to the minus I omega of xi, because that's T times T. TP xi is minus I omega, minus I T omega xi, times u hat 0. Squared dxi. And because omega is real and I stuck to the scalar case, that object is bounded. And if I didn't stick to the scalar case, this would be a matrix and I have to talk about the size of that object. And it still might be perfectly all right, but the subtleties of eigenvalues and et cetera led me to talk more. So scalar case, it is obvious. So this is equal to the integral of u naught c squared dx, which is my initial data, L2 norm squared. It's that simple. Let's check L2 continuity. So, I want to look at u of x t minus u0 of x, and I'm trying to measure that in L2, say, squared. Well, that's going to be equal to by the same principle, I put in e to the minus I omega xi t, e to the minus I omega of xi t, times u 0 hat of xi squared dxi minus 1. And then I have to decide, does this go to 0 as t goes to 0? And it's clearly this not uniformly, depending a bit on omega. However, remember what we did previously, which is we cut u naught off such that outside a large ball of radius r in Fourier space, this is bounded by 2, and this is going to be small, less than epsilon. And inside that ball in Fourier space, C is bounded, and you can take T to 0 to get this uniformly close to 1. So you can get this to go to 0 on each U naught fixed as T goes to 0. And we're almost done. And I guess I should show you, although I don't have my notes, that it has something to do with the equation itself. So, of course, I can take this expression and take derivatives of u, try to take derivatives of u, pass them through the integral sign, and see if I can get this relation to be satisfied. This relation to be satisfied. And then, of course, it's going to have something to do with the solution. But I can't pass derivatives through the integral sign. If I just have u naught there sitting as an L2 function, it's not so great. So what you'd rather do is look at what happens when you test it with a smooth function. So let me see. I have three things. One is L2 norm is not just bounded, it's preserved. This is unitary evolution. Two, it's continuous in L2. And so I'm working on three. I'm working on point three. I'm working on point three, which is, what does it have to do with the equation? So my claim is, this expression solves the equation, I think it's my equation three, in the, or in a weak sense. I guess there are a lot of ways to solve. A lot of different ways to solve something in the weak sense. So I'm going to solve it in the particular weak sense I'm about to show you. Sorry? Equation 1 is with a polynomial. So I want, equation 3. No, that's not good. Where did my equation go? Let's make it equation 4. That's what it is. This up here, equation 4. In a weak sense. So let's do that. Let's get this little tail out of here. So what I want to do is I'm going to say, I don't want to look at UXT itself because that might be too distributionally awful for me. What I'm just going to do is integrate against a smooth function of X and T. So I'm going to integrate against phi. So bide with me for a sec because I like to write these things down beforehand because it means they go smoothly. But I didn't do that last night, and so you might have to help. So and what I want to do is say that, let's see, and I guess, and by the Poincaré theorem, what I want to say that, and what I want to say is that this has something to do with the differential equation 4 that I've written down. So I'm going to say, I'll use the Poincaré theorem to say that, in fact, this is the same as if I integrated in t, but integrated u hat of c in t against phi hat bar of c in t dc dt. I was thinking of phi real, but I guess I'm allowing u to be complex, so thank you for keeping up with me. Really helps to have team effort here. And then I want to say u has a particular form, which is very nicely expressed in u hat, which is u0 hat of c. I used to pre-multiply, but it's just a scalar, so I'm going to post-multiply by it. E to the minus I omega c t times phi hat of c and t bar dc dt. And if I had chosen phi beforehand as something, then to satisfy something, then I will be in good shape. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to say that in fact I want to choose phi x of t to be equal to something rather else. And I want it to be d by dt, hang on a minute, minus d by dt of, this is a u, so it's d by dt of v. let me just try to get the signs right. I covered up my equation, so it's even worse. Let me just say that it's going to be d by dt dv plus I omega of c of I of omega of d v. And so phi hat, and I'm insisting that v be in c naught infinity. Oh, and I didn't say what phi was, but I want phi, I'm asking to be in c naught infinity. And so I could actually say that why not put v in c naught infinity, and then doing these derivatives, I'm in trouble again because I have a Fourier multiplier, not a differential operator. And doing these derivatives and application of a Fourier multiplier operator results in phi, I just made a jump, phi in Schwarz class, but maybe not c naught infinity. That's what I'll do. Thanks very much. I'm going to integrate against Schwarz class functions. And here's a little jump of logic, which, sorry. At least it's not a hot problem set problem. And so phi hat of c and t, it's just not so smooth if I didn't write it down beforehand, is given by minus d by dt of v hat, which is a function of c, but not hat and t, plus I omega c v hat. And let's put that into the integral, which is I have to study this u0 hat c, then I have a bar over e to the I omega c t minus d by dt of v hat plus I omega c v hat dc dt. And what I have to say is that the only t that appears is in v here and here. And so and u hat is an L2 function, but v is smooth, so I can rewrite v is smooth in t, so I can rewrite this by integration by parts. And so if I integrate by parts from this onto this oscillatory term, I'm going to obtain the following thing: dc dt u, and I'm nervous partly because of the sign. I integrate by parts, I get a plus, and it brings down an I omega c v hat of c plus, oh, the pain of it. I have to go back and change the signs. I omega c v hat of c. A whole thing bar, dc dt. I was supposed to choose plus, it seems, because then I get a minus and these cancel. So the goal of this story is to say that if you integrate u, which is given by this expression, against this, you get zero, which is like saying that the solution the u I'm giving you solves the PDE in the distributional sense. You test it, and you get zero. Okay, so the conclusion is solves PDE. It's not even a PDE. It's a pseudo-differential equation. CDE in the distributional sense. And, of course, I'm giving the definition of a distributional sense as we speak. That's what it means to solve it in distributional sense. What you want to do is test u against the equation on an arbitrary C0 infinity function. So v is arbitrary, not phi. And then you get zero.
Yeah.
So I agree. I started with a test function phi, but I was devious. I really want a test function v. It's calling for a definition. So definition three. And also, not three because I have a proposition three. So definition four, which is u in L2, and this can extend to distributions, but u in L2 for the moment, solves the equation. I could give a general equation. The equation H U equals F in the sense of distributions if for all V in C naught infinity. Now look over here. V, we have integral of V, I guess we need a bar, H U dx is equal to integral of of v bar f dx. Sorry, I wanted that. I did this backwards. H transpose of v u bar dx equals v bar f dx. Not allowed to use the derivative touching u. And this calculation was, what should H transpose be? And I didn't do it in my head right, and I got the sign wrong. In our particular case, H is depends on t and on x, and indeed I'm taking t and x, and t and x, or t and c derivatives. So, yep. I left that out. I'm sorry. It just factored out e to the I omega x t. I'm sorry. You see what happens when if I don't write it down ahead of time, it gets scattered. Any further comments, complaints, suggestions? I want to talk, the whole point of this was not to give you, I guess the whole point has now become, here's the definition of what it means to solve something in a distributional sense. But the real point I wanted to make, u being an L2 function and h containing derivatives, that's exactly what I didn't quite want to do. No, that's why it has a star. D by dt is not self-adjoint as an operator in t. 1 upon I d by dt is. But that's why it has a star. Okay. Are we unbogged down now and can move on? The point of me bringing up this class of equations, I wanted to analyze those solutions. So I want to really look at the behavior of solutions given by this expression 3, expression 3 on the board. So I want to analyze the behavior of solutions that look like this. So let's look at the solution formula, and I want to look at it for large t. So let's look at the long time behavior. So what I'm going to give is u of x t is equal to the integral. I guess I need this root, this annoyance factor, 1 upon root 2 pi n e to the I do I want double Fourier transform? Yep. Let me do it this way. No square root, 1 upon 2 pi to the n, e to the I, c dot x minus y minus omega c t. The I and the omega I put outside the parentheses. Integrated against u hat of y dx. And I want to rewrite that. I guess I'll keep it as a double integral. This is a double integral. E to the I. And I want to just rewrite the phase in the following form. C dot x minus y over t minus omega of c. Close the parenthesis. Now I'm lacking a t, so I put back the t. Times u naught. This is all the exponent, so the u is below. U naught of y dy dx. That's our solution expression from far on the left side of the blackboards. And I want to understand how solutions of this form behave. So this is now, boy, I have a lot of definitions today. So I guess not counting on my notes, but indeed counting on the blackboard, definition 5 is due to Kelvin. And this is something I gave last time, and I'm just pulling it up for recall's sake, the phase and the group velocity. So one is the phase velocity. the phase velocity. Of equation 4, is it? It's uncovered. It's covered, but there it's uncovered. Of equation 4 is the expression c phase. It's a vector. If c is an Rn, which is omega of c divided by c. So to do that vectorially, I take c, that's the direction of c, and then that's divided by c. And 2 is the group velocity. Is c, it's a vector, sub g, is equal partial by partial c of omega of c. And I want to describe the significance of the terms. Actually, I guess I talked about that already in my last lecture. I said what I want the group and phase velocities to do. Do you want me to say that again? Do you want me to not say that again? Who would like to hear it again? Okay, plenty of votes. So, what significance does this have? Easiest to study by a particular solution. So, let's try. So, significance. Here's a particular solution. U of 0 of y is delta at 0, which means all we have is this complex exponential as a solution. That's a good thing to study the phase velocity. So a solution is e to the I c dot x minus y over t minus omega of c. T. I don't want to write that. Sorry. Let's fix a particular c, and I'm going to call that some number k, a constant vector k, a constant vector. See, I'm stuck between three cultures. If I'm a pure mathematician doing Fourier analysis, everyone calls the Fourier transform variable c. If I'm an applied mathematician, it's obviously wave number k. It's just the same space and everything. It's just a different name for the variable. If I'm a physicist, I call it p, or could call it p. So I'm going to interpolate between my hats by saying a particular wave number k, but normally the variable will be c, okay? And then I want to do the following thing. I want this to be e to the I k dot x minus omega of k. T, that's the solution of the equation, which I now want to rewrite in the following form. E to the I k dot a vector. X minus omega k over mod k squared k. Phase velocity. T. And now what I want to do is just look at that expression. So in particular, the lines on which phase is constant are given by, k, the phase is k dot x minus omega k over k squared k t equals constant. And just by examining this, we can see this is x minus a velocity times t. And so those lines move with at a given velocity. Just to say that in words, to say that in pictures. Here's x, here's t, and here's a solution. Since I can't draw two more dimensions to give a graph, so to speak, of this, I'm going to superpose the real part of this solution. So it looks like a cosine. That's a little bit of it near the origin, but that's amplitude, but now I'm going to say I'm going to move it in t, so it's both amplitude and time. I'm going to try to make it sort of a perspective drawing. At later time, this center of this peak moves, and this new solution has peaks and troughs, same wavelength, but peaks and troughs displaced. That's the center that moved over. What's the slope of that line? 1 upon c. C is the velocity of that line. That's the phase velocity. So if I look at the peaks of an individual piece of the phase, those peaks move along at that velocity. I throw a rock in the water, and that makes all these ripples, and I look at the top of a ripple, and it moves along. That moves at phase velocity. So now, here's the significance of the group velocity. I can't just look at one pure oscillation. I have to look at something more complicated. So what I have to do is look at a packet of waves, so a wave packet. So let's see how we do this. I'm going to give initial data. Here's x. Here truly is amplitude. And what I'm going to do is look at something that looks a little bit like that. That's some initial data. But I'm actually not just going to look at this, but I'm going to look at this as the envelope. So I have to draw its negative, which is fairly successful. And then I want that to be the envelope of something which has a carrier frequency, and meaning that this distance from here to here is going to be the wavelength, which is 2 pi upon k. So it's small if k is big. And I want to ask how this propagates. So what I want to say is, if I now draw this kind of thing, and so that was easy because I just drew the, rewrote the phase and then pointed. But now what I have to do is prove a theorem for you about group velocity. Okay, so that's my goal for the next 20 minutes or so. I'm going to give you the intuition, and then it's going to be 11:30, so I'm going to stop. We can have a short break. Okay, so here's the intuition. Here's x. Now I'm going to draw the same graph. Here's x. Here's t. Here's that initial bump, and I sort of want to make it something which had a bit of a signature. And now I look at it at later time. So this had this. Where are these bumps? Now, of course, they also change. Those bumps also change. Whoops, I drew this wrong. I took the center of that bump, and where does that go? The bumps also change their form, and that's a complicated thing which merits a lot of attention. But at least the center, I want to tell you where it goes. And that center goes over here, possibly in different form. Same carrier frequency, and that goes with a certain speed, a certain velocity. And I want to tell you what that is. That's C group. So the center moves like x minus t times C group, center of the packet. So that's where, if you make information out of sequences of packets, that's where information travels. Okay? So, good stopping point. Let's have a very short break, and then my challenge is to explain that to you in a theorem after you come back.